How do you feel about alcohol? Let's talk about that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have this conversation a lot with people.
Yeah.
So, I'm very realistic about alcohol intake. Obviously, we know that there's no amount of alcohol that's good for you. Okay. I think that there is probably a safe amount of alcohol that people can have that won't lead to long-term consequences, but it's a very small amount.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Save Yourself with Dr. Amy Shah. I have another amazing Shah, Dr. Darshan Shah. Thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to give everyone a little bit of an intro to who you are if they haven't heard about you yet, but they will hear about you because you're just blossoming and all over the place. It's very exciting. So, just so for people who don't know, Darshan Shah, MD, is a health and wellness specialist. He's a board-certified surgeon. He's a published author, entrepreneur, and the founder of Next Health. It's the world's first and largest health optimization and longevity clinic. He has expertise in all body systems, and he's performed over 20,000 surgical procedures, including trauma surgery and complex reconstructive procedures. So he's also a longevity medicine specialist, which is kind of what I want to talk a lot about today.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we are always wondering how to age, not necessarily anti-age, but how do we age successfully? I think that's kind of the way we want to talk about it. And of course, I want you to introduce yourself, and it's such a pleasure to reconnect with you after so many years.
So such a pleasure to reconnect with you, Amy. I remember years ago when we met at the Mind Body Green Conference, and we were both
Yes.
just getting started, and look at how far you've come and we've done. It's
You,
just
yeah.
amazing. And I think during our lifetime in this field in the last 10 years, things have really blossomed in the space of longevity medicine, where I've kind of focused my attention. And it's been an incredible journey. Like, I had my own personal health journey, which brought me to the Mind Body Green conference. And then from there, I was like, this field is definitely at its infancy, and now we're seeing a massive amount of attention around longevity medicine. So, yeah, I'd love to dive in with you on whatever questions you have.
Well, what's the story? I think I know a little bit about it, but I want you to share it with everyone because I think the personal transformation journey is always so fascinating because you had to go through some kind of health crisis to really realize as a doctor what was missing.
Yeah, so like typically, after residency, we start a practice, right, Amy? And then we start seeing patients, and we're starting, if you don't work for somebody else, you're both working in your practice as a physician and a surgeon, and you're working on the practice and the business aspect. So you end up working literally 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I did that for about 15 years, which took a huge toll on my body. I was eating whatever I could find, whatever donuts and nurses brought into the surgeon's lounge. I was sleeping whenever I could find time to sleep. My sleep was horrible. I never went to the gym, and that kind of lifestyle has consequences, right? And so I was 50 pounds overweight, uncontrolled hypertension, which you and I know is like three medications, and my blood pressure is still high. I was pre-diabetic, almost diabetic. My hemoglobin A1C was like 6.4. And lastly, most concerningly, I was developing an autoimmune problem. Lots of joint pains. I was actually losing tissue in my skull, believe it or not, from an autoimmune problem. And then, like a lot of us, I think there's a moment in time that occurs in our life, hopefully, where we decide we need to reverse course as things are going in the wrong direction. That happened on the birthday of my first child when my child was born at the same hospital that I operate in. It was an incredible day in my life, as it is for most of us, all of us, hopefully. I went down to the doctor's lounge when the whole event was over because, I operate there too. And one of the doctors had left a journal on the coffee table. So I opened it up and it said, all-cause mortality rates for people with more than three diagnoses. So I had autoimmune disease, hypertension, and the prediabetes, as well as some other problems. And there was, doing the math, there was about a 50% chance that I would die before my kid graduated from high school.
Oh my
And I was
God.
like, wow, I cannot be living this kind of life. I was an older dad. I waited till I was 40 to have my first child. I was like, I gotta stay alive for these kids. And so that's what made me really
Wow.
kind of do a deep dive into my own health journey.
That's so fascinating. And I think, it's sad that in medicine, we really don't get taught all the things that I talk about. Oh, having more protein in your diet, eating less processed foods, or, all of these things of nutrition wise. I think about my training years and how we were fed, taught to eat, basically teach people by example. So when people see you, drinking soda and coffee and, Starbucks and all that stuff, like that's what you're kind of reflecting to your patients. And it just kind of snowballs from there. So I'm
Yeah.
glad you had that wake up call. I had a similar wake up call, very different story, but a wake up call that is basically something that changed my life and the trajectory of my life. And by the way, were you an immigrant? Like, did you come to the US when you were your parents already in the US?
No, my parents had just come a year before from India, a
Okay.
year before I was born. Yes.
And because I came when I was 5 years old,
Yeah.
and I think I remember I wanted to grow up so badly. Like I wanted to fit in. I wanted to grow up. I wanted to eat what everybody was eating and talk the way everyone's talking, especially when I started to go to these schools that were very mainstream and very unlike what I thought I was used to. And I felt like an outsider. I wanted to fit in. And then now, we want things to slow down. Like, I don't necessarily, I'm not in a rush to get to my next birthday milestone and kind of want to reverse aging. And I know that's a lot of what you do with this new world. What are the like biggest strategies for you, or maybe the things that you do for people at Next Health or
Yep.
that can help that slowing down that aging process?
Yeah, and there's a lot to that. And so, when people come to NexHealth, they look at us as a longevity center, and that's exactly what we are. However, I always have to reframe longevity for people because I think people want to come in and get a magic pill or know what my sauna protocol is, or is there a stem cell treatment that I can do to achieve longevity? And we have to kind of rewind the story all the way to the beginning, the things that you were just kind of alluding to. And I frame it for people. I have this framework called the wellness wheel. There's 12 points of your wellness that you need to address, and you pretty much need to address them in order, right? And so before you start seeking advanced longevity treatments, if you don't have your diet and your sleep and your movement totally optimized, you're really just wasting your money and your time, to be honest with you, And so I have to like rewind people back into just first focusing on the basics, getting the basics down. Then we talk about a lot of aspects around advanced diagnostics and making sure you don't die from the major causes of death that occur for humans, right? So number one cause of death is heart disease and heart attacks. Second is cancer, and last, and then metabolic disease. And then we start integrating functional medicine into their life, things like gut health, hormonal health, detoxification. And then lastly, we start incorporating longevity technology and longevity strategies. Because if you don't approach longevity from a really solid base, the entire pyramid just crumbles. And the
100%.
tip of the pyramid is the longevity science stuff.
Okay, well, that being said, what is your favorite? I'm putting you on the spot. What is your favorite or more most promising that tip of the iceberg longevity cutting edge science?
Right. So some of the things that we're doing is, number one, we have what we call our longevity circuit that we have people do, proven technologies that, in my opinion, and also the opinion of many doctors and scientific researchers, can really move the needle of how many years you have in your life, and also the amount of health in your years, amount of health span in your lifespan. And so that longevity circuit for our patients is coming in and doing a sauna therapy treatment about 40 minutes, and then we have cryotherapy, and then we have a 40-minute LED therapy treatment, and then finally we do a hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So it's about a 3-hour circuit that people do. And we've seen massive changes in people's biological age just by putting that in. People doing that once a week or once every 2 weeks, has been just by doing those four items, we see reversal. Secondly, one of the things that I'm really excited about that we're doing as well is we're doing a treatment called therapeutic plasma exchange. I don't know if you've heard of that one yet or not, but we do that for people on either a 6-week protocol or a quarterly protocol. And for those of you who don't know, therapeutic plasma exchange is where we basically hook you up to a big machine that is removing blood from one arm, spinning it down, completely separating your plasma from your blood cells, and then giving you back your blood cells. That plasma is discarded because that plasma is where all the inflammatory mediators live. It's where malformed protein complexes are. It's where toxins are. It's all lives in your plasma. And so by removing that pre-specified interval can make a big difference as well. And then finally, a lot of patients of ours actually do stem cell treatments as well. So we're doing a lot of stem cell therapies. There's a lot of medications out there that I'm excited about too, that I'm following very closely, things like rapamycin and a few other supplement protocols. But that's kind of where we take people after getting the base of their health right.
I love that. I just noticed in the background of anybody who's watching on video and see my 16-year-old Jaden say hi to Dr. Shah. That's my post-residency son, 16. And he really taught me, one thing he taught me is he broke his jaw from a bad fall this year. And to watch a 16-year-old not be able to eat and to watch the change in his energy, his mood, his affect, his school, because he wasn't able to take in good nutrition. He was literally having just protein shakes, very simple, like thin liquids. His jaw was wired shut. And that to me solidified what nutrition can do for us because I just thought, wow, in 1 month to watch this thriving, strong, muscular, happy child. And watching it as a mom, it was so troubling to me because in about a few weeks, he went to this like lethargic, sad, you know, he couldn't socialize, he couldn't eat well, couldn't exercise. And all of these things that we're talking about, like I thought to myself, wow, this is what the power of food is on ourselves. Going back to the things that you were talking about, the plasma exchange, is that one of the best ways to get rid of things like pesticides or heavy metals? That's one question I did have.
So we are using it for removal of toxins as well. And so people that are only at ozone as our previous kind of like detoxification type of treatment, ozone therapy treatments. So and now with plasma exchange, we're seeing even better effects of getting rid of the heavy metals, things like Lyme disease, pesticides, et cetera. Yes.
What do you think about, what do you call like this BPC 157, these peptide kind of
Peptides,
things?
yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of peptides, and there's a lot of politics going on behind the scenes right now with peptides because, as we know, with Mounjaro and all these weight loss peptides like Wegovy, et cetera, the pharmaceutical industry has found out how massively profitable they can be, and so they have convinced the FDA to put them on a different schedule so that we can no longer prescribe peptides, unfortunately. However, peptides are massively beneficial because they're not just regular drugs. What they are actual segments of hormones that we naturally make in our body anyway. We've just figured out the exact code of these proteins and how they fit into the locks of the receptors in our body to elicit specific responses. So for example, you mentioned BPC 157, which is an incredible peptide for accelerating healing from injuries. So all my surgical patients, I put them on BPC 157, and it does a massively incredible job of just accelerating their healing. People that have had joint injuries, et cetera. There's
What
other
about
peptides.
sermorelin? How do you feel about that, the growth hormone?
Growth hormone secret analogs like samarelin, epomorelin, CJC, all of those are very effective in people with low growth hormone levels, which happens to all of us as we age, to have a natural kind of push in your body to secrete your natural growth hormone, which I like it better than giving exogenous growth hormone because it is a natural push to get your own growth hormone secretion up to par. Now, with those, you have to be a little bit careful because you do want to cycle them on and off. You don't want to be on them constantly. So it's really just kind of following your IGF levels and also doing appropriate cycling.
Yeah, for those who don't know, IGF is kind of a, it's not a direct marker, but it's like a secondary like marker of your growth hormone, but it's also, it does a lot of other things. It's just a marker. And yeah, I think IGF-1 is so interesting because you want it to go up because of your growth hormone, but then you don't want it to be too high because it
Exactly.
can shorten your life as well. So that part is really interesting. And how do you feel about these studies that show a massive growth hormone boost with the sauna therapy? I love the data on sauna therapy, but that growth hormone piece, I'm not 100% sure that I've seen it clinically, I'm wondering if you've seen people like go to sauna. I know all the other benefits, like there's cardiovascular benefits, brain benefits, weight loss benefits, you know, all of this stuff. What about growth hormone benefits? Have you seen that kind of sustains beyond just the therapy itself?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the benefit that we see with sauna therapy is through the mediation of growth hormone, is through growth hormone, and also through heat shock proteins. And so I think both of those have a lot to do with why the sauna is so beneficial. Anything you can do to get a pulse of growth hormone is massively beneficial to your brain, to your muscles, as we know, just overall. But you said something interesting there too, because I think a lot of people, we need to double click on that. A lot of people don't really understand the interplay between growth and recovery, right? And so if you're always in a growth state, your body doesn't have time to recover. And you have to have the natural cycling of both going on constantly. So that's why doing just growth hormone all the time, you're going to have potential longevity decrease versus the cycling of it. So that's why sauna is great too, because you get that pulse of growth hormone. And I do sauna at night because that's when you naturally stimulate your natural growth hormone production at nighttime as well. And growth hormone at night is extremely beneficial for your, not just your sleep, but just overall muscle brain health as well.
How old is your oldest one, by the way? I want to tell you the growth hormone story. Okay.
10.
10. Okay, so
10, yeah.
my son that you just saw behind me, or that people just saw, he's pretty tall. But he told me, how do you get taller? How do you boost growth hormone? Because guess what? TikTok is full of these boys and girls like who are looking for strategies to grow bone, to grow muscle, and to grow taller. And you know, one of the biggest things I told him, and when I was in training, that we learned is that your biggest growth hormone burst comes about an hour after you go to bed, that your natural growth hormone spike. Now, there are things you can do to improve that, like improve your sleep quality and actually go to bed at the same time every night so you get that spike. And with teenagers, you'll see coming up soon, they don't like to sleep and their school schedule is created to minimize sleep because they start super early in the morning, they have practice till late at night. And I thought to myself, I said, instead of looking for these hacks and these protein powders and these things that you could be doing, focus on the actual largest growth hormone spike, which happens in like pretty much an hour after you go to bed.
No, that's so well said. And I think there's a big movement right now in this country that I'm kind of following and I want to participate in, where, you know, we decrease the amount of homework kids get and push school to starting an hour later, because teenagers especially, they need 10 to 12 hours of sleep. And we're making them sleep only 4 to 6 hours with the way we run our schools. And they're losing out on a lot of not just growth hormone secretion, but all the benefits of sleep just because of that. And so I think that's very well said. If you can get your kids to go to bed at the same time every night, even on the weekends, which is key, that get really dysregulated on the weekends is hard to do, but I think you're absolutely right, and it's good advice.
I love the sauna therapy thing because I'm new to sauna therapy in the sense that, like, you know, in our training, we don't talk about sauna therapy.
Never.
And like those studies, all the studies that came out basically out of Finland are all the ones that, you know, show all these huge benefits in large populations. So in your clinic, in your recommendation, do you recommend dry sauna and what's the temperature and the time? What are people kind of aiming for?
Yeah, so with sauna therapy, I have a sauna right here next to me, actually. And
Awesome.
so, yeah, so with sauna therapy, all the studies out of Finland have been done on dry sauna, right? Of course, so that's what they use out there. And so I recommend sticking with the dry sauna. I think it's actually easier to use. We try to get up to like 180 in our sauna, and we do a protocol where we do 20 minutes on, and then I do a 3 minute cold plunge. So I have a cold plunge right next to my sauna, 20. 3, 20, and 3. That's what I do once a week, just for part of my exercise routine. I count that as part of my exercise routine. That's my day off of working out, and that's what I do instead.
Love
And
it.
then I also try to do as many times as I can go in at night for about 30 to 40 minutes as well. So
So how
that's
many times a week, to people who may be new to this, what do you recommend for optimal longevity and maybe a starting piece?
start with even just doing it once a week. You want to get used to it. And if you have access, you know, it's hard to access a sauna for many people. So don't worry about what time of day you do it. Just try to get it in whenever you can. After work for a lot of people is really relaxing and de-stressing as well. And then I would almost try to aim for 3 to 4 times a week of sauna therapy.
Yeah, I think that's
Yeah.
where you see the biggest benefits. Like 5 times a
Exactly.
week was like in Finland, but for them, it's like a part of life. So they're, getting it. And 180 is very hot, I will say. So 167 seems to like the temperature that they kind of looked at in the studies, but 180 is even better because you can get
Well,
better results.
I don't know if it's better, Amy, to be honest with you. I think it's different for everybody. You know, we're all individual pieces of biology. And I wouldn't try to push myself into something that's super uncomfortable. You know, I think that everyone has their own temperature where they're going to see the most amount of benefit. For me, I don't feel like I'm getting the good sweat until I get to like 180, you know? And so,
Wow.
yeah. And it's different in
You
summer
are a
where.
strong individual. Like, I went into the sauna the other day and literally sat there for maybe 5 minutes at 180, and I thought I was going to die because it was my first time at that high heat. I think you have to get used to it. And for people who are doing it for the first time, definitely be very, very gentle with your body. I'm sure you have a protocol with people, but I think it's easy to want to stay in there the first day for the maximum amount of time. But, doing it myself on a regular basis now, I realize how hard it is. It's easy to say 20 to 30 minutes. It's not easy to do.
Absolutely. And the last thing you want to do is, you know, force yourself to stay in there and then pass out in there. And then you're, especially when you're alone, I mean, there's some dangerous situations that can happen. So, really ease your way into it. You know what else is great about the sauna is it's a great place to socialize or have a connection with somebody. So, I almost always try to do it with a friend. It takes my mind off of being in the sauna or do it with a loved one, and you can have a nice conversation because you don't want to bring your phone in there because it'll
That's a
mess up your
great
phone.
idea.
Yeah, so.
That's one of the issues I've had because I'm like sitting there and you don't have your phone, you're just like staring and every minute feels like 10 minutes. So
Yes.
that's a great idea because I do a lot of walks, like outdoor walks with people. I've literally switched my whenever someone is that I want to meet up with that I haven't seen in a long time that lives locally or even not when I'm in their town to go for a walk or to do something active instead of sitting and having a drink or things like that has really transformed. It feels so good to be in nature. It forces you to be outside. It forces you to be off your phone, have a real connection. It's something that I do a few times a week now on a regular basis. So I
That's a
really love
great
that.
habit.
But
Great
adding
habit.
sauna is a good idea for that too.
Yeah, invite
How
someone over to your sauna.
exactly? Well, I have to get a sauna before I invite someone over, but that's next. I go to one. There's a
Yes.
we have a beautiful fitness center right across the street, but how do you feel about alcohol? Let's talk about that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I have this conversation a lot with people. So, you know, I'm very realistic about alcohol intake. Obviously, we know that there's no amount of alcohol that's good for you. Okay. I think that there is probably a safe amount of alcohol that people can have that won't lead to long-term consequences, but it's a very small amount, right? And so I think almost everybody is over that in their alcohol consumption. And I say that just because it's been part of our culture for centuries to have some wine or something with dinner, et cetera. So I'm trying to be very realistic with my patients. And my advice to most people is like, look, you have to keep it under 2 drinks a day, if at all possible. And don't drink every single day. Like, you know, just try to limit the number of days that you're drinking. Taking days off in between is very beneficial for your liver to recover, for your brain to recover. So, like, you know, that whole kind of tradition of a nightly cocktail, I try to steer people away from that. I also recognize that there's times that people go out and they just have a few drinks, right? And so I always tell them if you have more than 4 drinks, which I count as a binge night, more than 4 drinks, take at least a week off of drinking completely. And so I think that's really helped people like have a realistic kind of view around alcohol. Also, it's a lot of it depends on what type of alcohol you're drinking and how many mixers you're putting in. A lot of the damage from alcohol comes not just from the alcohol, but the sugar or the gluten in beer, et cetera.
I think that's a really good point. I think the culture around alcohol is hopefully changing a little bit because I think when we were, when I was in college and med school, the culture was alcohol. Like there was nobody who was not binge drinking. But I think after now, I see it's starting to change, especially in a lot of the young population groups because of the also, the reality of what alcohol can do to our bodies, but also the realizations of the after effects. Like most, I know for me, when even throughout the years, how much of tomorrow do I want to waste is like how I feel about alcohol because the sleep is off and then your mood is off and your eating is off. And so it's basically you're borrowing from tomorrow when you drink today. So that's kind of the
That's a
strategy.
great point. I love that. I love that thought process. And not just borrowing from the immediate day tomorrow, but from your entire longevity, because we know that alcohol consumption is very tightly associated with Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, metabolic syndrome, all of it.
I know. Now, shifting to what is it that you're really excited about? What's next? So, we talked about nutrition, a little bit about sauna, about lowering your alcohol, about some of these therapies. What are you really excited about? Like, what are people not, what's the thing that's up and coming or something that you don't think enough people know about in the health and wellness and longevity space?
It's a great line of questioning because there is so much happening right now in the longevity space. It's mind-blowing. So I think just let's pick some low-hanging fruit to talk about first, and then I'll talk to you about some science that I'm tracking that is kind of really pushing the frontier. So low-hanging fruit, we are, as a human race, we die from a few things. One is heart disease. I'm really excited about this AI Clearly scan. It's a CT scan of your heart that can visualize every single blood vessel and whether you have hard or soft plaque and dangerous plaque, unstable plaque. Now we can see with a quick, 30-minute scan of our chest how blocked our blood vessels are. And by knowing that data at an earlier age, you can actually reverse some of these blockages with therapeutics. And so super excited about the whole world of cardiology changing into early diagnosis and prevention and using medication to turn heart disease around, which we never had that. You basically marched along with heart disease until you needed a stent or an angioplasty. And we know it's still a fact, unfortunately, that 50% of heart disease is diagnosed at your first heart attack, and 50% of those are fatal, sadly. And so just that turning around is incredible.
Clearly, is that a AI? Like, is that something that's available to the public?
Yeah, so it's a
Okay.
CT angiogram.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Clearly is one company that does a CT
Got it.
angiogram, but they have the software package around it that
Got
visualizes
it.
vessels. Yeah. So
Very
I've been
cool.
doing that on almost all my patients with risk factors.
That's
And we've
great.
been, yeah. And when I say saving lives, like really years before anyone else would have diagnosed them for heart disease.
How much does it cost for a patient to do that with you?
Actually, your insurance will cover it. So,
Okay.
most of the times your insurance will cover it. If it doesn't, it's like $700 or $800.
Wow, I mean, if insurance covers it, that's really amazing. But it, even without it, it's actually doable.
Actually doable, right? The other test that on the cancer front that I'm really bullish about is the liquid biopsy test. We're also doing that for all of our patients.
Okay.
What a liquid biopsy is where you take a blood sample and you can actually sequence all the DNA in that blood sample and find what's called cell-free DNA. These are little pieces of DNA that have come off of tumor cells and made it into your bloodstream. And for about 50 different types of cancer, we can identify cancers at stage one, actually. And so it's another kind of tool in screening technology to look for cancer at a much earlier stage for cancers that previously we could not detect. There was no real good test for it. Things like pancreatic tumors, things like liver or bile duct tumors. We had no real good test for that. I always say if Steve Jobs was alive today, he probably would not have been died of pancreatic cancer because we would have pre-diagnosed it.
See, I thought there was a different name to it. Maybe there's multiple brands on the market.
Yes, there's a few brands on the market now. There's the Galleri Grill
Yeah, the
test.
gallery. That's the one
Yes.
I've heard of. Okay.
We do this whole thing called an executive physical where we do all of the testing up front, both from like a preventative standpoint, from functional medicine standpoint, et cetera. And we put it kind of all together for people. So this is one of the tests that we use as well. And then lastly, something that I've been using on all my patients as well, because metabolic disease, as we know, is a foundation for all other diseases, is the continuous glucose monitor. Have you been using that with your patients?
I have used it before. It's definitely something that takes a little bit of getting used to, but I think it's great data. Like, I remember this was a long time ago, and I had an interview coming up, and I was like noticing my blood sugar spiking in the moments before. And it just tells you how much stress really plays in your blood sugar as well. And I don't know if you have this, but I have a very strong history, family history of diabetes. And so my blood sugars tend to run higher. And so it was really eye-opening for me because I thought, oh, I'm work out like a maniac. I have a nutrition background. Like, I thought I was doing great. And then I did that continuous glucose monitor, and turns out like I definitely do have to watch my blood sugars.
And I think a lot of people learn different things about their own personal biology by using these devices on on themselves, because every is a different body. And so we all react differently to different things. For example, a banana, if you eat a banana, it could spike your glucose. And for me, maybe not. And there's the order in which you eat your food. So if you eat your fiber and vegetables first, that's so much better than front loading your meal with carbohydrates. All these little things can prevent glucose spikes. So I've been using that a lot. I mean, every patient, in my opinion, gets one for 6 weeks just to learn,
Well, I think, the criticism of the glucose monitor and the Galleri or this liquid biopsy test, I don't, maybe the angiogram as well, is, they're all new modalities. And so one of my colleagues who's a cancer oncologist, a cancer specialist, she was reviewing all the data on the Galleri test, which is similar to the liquid biopsy. And what I think is important for people to know is that a lot of these newer tests, especially that one, it's new. So it comes with false positives and it will come with false negatives. That means that there will be people with cancer that won't get diagnosed on that test, and there will be people who don't have cancer that will have positive signal on that test. And as long as you go in with that knowledge, I think they can be so useful. Like you said, like these are diagnostics that weren't available and don't have years and years of data because it's new. And the data that we do have shows that there may be some improvements that can be made to them as we move forward. But as long as you know that going in, and same thing with the CGM, the continuous glucose monitor, I think that for some people, there was like this backlash against it. I don't know if you saw it on social media, but that they were saying, oh, patients should not be using it. And it's because, if you don't work with a provider, if you don't know, there are people who will stop eating fruit because it's spiking their blood sugar when we know that there's so many other aspects of fruit that are so good for you that, wouldn't get it. So what do you think about that kind of criticism around these?
That's a really good point. And you know what I say to people is like, yes, one test by itself is going to have a certain amount of false positives, a certain amount of false negatives. That's why you can't just go out there and just buy the test yourself, do it, and feel totally confident that it's positive or negative. You need to team up with someone who knows what they're doing and make it part of an overall program of testing, right? And so, first of all, not everyone needs all these tests, right? So, you only should do it if you really do need it. You have to find a provider that is going to do it proactively for you as well, instead of reactively, and then combine it with other modalities. So, if you have a false positive rate on one test and you add it to a different test that has a different false positive rate, they're kind of like a Venn diagram. They work together to give you a more truer picture. So just like the continuous glucose monitor, you shouldn't like just put it on there and stop eating food. You need to have that nutrition background, that knowledge. I love this book called Glucose Revolution. Have you seen that book by Jesse Insupe?
Oh, yes, glucose goddess.
Glucose goddess. She's the glucose goddess. Follow her Instagram. She's great. She wrote a really good book on that I always give to my patients with the monitor, because I'm like, look, this is going to give you data, but you need education on top of it. And so using these two together is what's really going to be helpful. So there's a lot of pieces involved. You're absolutely right. And just diving into the technology without having someone to kind of hold your hand through it can sometimes lead to negative consequences.
Yeah, but I think all of this is so exciting. So tell us what is next for Next Health for you. Where can people find you? How can people get more information? Like all of the things.
Next for Next Health is, we're growing very rapidly. We have about 50 locations opening in the next 3 years right now, and probably even
Love it.
more. And we're really setting ourselves up as a platform. So when these new technologies that are emerging come out, there'll be a Next Health close to you that you can kind of learn about it, you can do it, and you can do it in a place that you feel comfortable because we've been doing it for a long time. And so one of the things keeping my finger on the pulse of are some of these gene therapies that are coming out right now. I know they're only being done in other countries right now, but I feel like they might be coming here very soon. There's also a lot of research going on around actually age reversal at a cellular level by turning around your methylation clocks and using these things called Yamanaka factors to actually reverse cellular aging, not just stop it, reverse it. And so when that technology becomes more mainstream, I think that it's very easy to apply. We, of course, need to make sure it's safe and beneficial before we do it. But these are things that can be done with simple IV therapies as well. So these kind of things are going to be coming soon. And I don't think people realize how soon they will be coming because we're on this exponential growth curve, just like technology, as biotechnology is exponentially advancing. What does that mean? It means that we're learning more every year than we've learned in the last 2 or 3 years. And that's happening every single year. We're learning more and more and more. And so these things are going to come super fast. And the key, I tell all my patients, just stay alive and stay healthy long enough so when these things come out, you can actually be around to benefit from them, right? And
I
so
love
that's
that.
what we're always talking about.
Well, I always ask everyone this, but I'd love for you to share your kind of personal dietary guidelines. How do you structure your own day and your own food and nutrition?
Great question. And I like that you asked it in that way. Like, how do you do it? Because what I do is not going to work for everybody. But I think there's definitely some foundational things that I stick to every single day. I try to get my nutrition from real organic whole food. I think there's a lot of focus around powders and supplements and this and that. And it's like there's nothing better than just having good food on your plate as much as you can. So, as much as you can, I try to eat meals with whole food that is organic and well sourced. I don't skip breakfast anymore. I used to do intermittent fasting, but I found that it was really hard to get the protein intake I needed. So I do 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. I'm a big guy, so that's about 200 grams of protein. I have to split that up over 3 times during the day. I really love the advice of 500 to 800 grams of vegetables a day as well. So I really try to get that as much as I can with even my kids, believe it or not, they eat vegetables in the morning now, believe it or
Wow.
not, with their breakfast, with their eggs in the
Wow.
morning. Yeah, broccoli and eggs is breakfast every morning, believe it or not, and some
That's
avocado.
awesome.
I try to just keep it as clean as possible. And like, just like everybody else, I cheat sometimes and, but I try not to cheat very, very often. Other than that, dietary side is just really, I learned a lot wearing the continuous glucose monitor. I try to minimize my sugar intake, carbohydrate intake, gluten intake, sensitive to gluten. I try to also really veer toward just drinking water as much as possible. We're such an underhydrated species right now. So try to get in as much
100%.
water as possible as well.
I love that. Okay, what about drinking for yourself?
Drinking alcohol? So I have a glass of wine every once in a while with dinner. I try to limit my drinking to Thursday and Friday and Saturday. Those are my 3 days. And once again, if I have a long night with friends, I'll take a week off of alcohol completely. So it's like, it's like reverse psychology is like, I don't ever want to drink 4 drinks because I know I won't be able to drink next weekend again.
Yeah, that's
So that's how
great.
I kind of limit myself.
That's great. That's actually a really good philosophy. What about sleep? I mean, you're super busy. How much do you sleep?
I let my natural circadian rhythms guide my sleep. So, just like the continuous glucose monitor, I think everyone should track their sleep for about 6 weeks and see what improvements you can make. When I first started tracking my sleep, I found out I was getting only 30 minutes of deep sleep every night. And that's because I was not sleeping according to my circadian rhythm. And so I fall asleep normally, like, believe it or not, 9 p.m. is when I go to bed. I
Me
wake
and
up at
you.
5. Yeah, at the 5 a.m. I love 9 to 5 is my sleep time. I love it. And I wake up
I
naturally.
think people are maybe surprised, but I think a lot of people have that kind of sleep schedule. But I think you just don't allow yourself because, you may have the freedom to have a little bit of time to think during the day. But for a lot of people, that bedtime procrastination happens because they've had zero time to themselves all day, especially, when your kids were young and my kids were young. I feel like that was
Yeah.
happening a lot. And also, I didn't value sleep as much during
Right.
those times. So but I'm with you. I'm 100% believe in kind of keeping a regular cycle and keeping a very full sleep schedule as much as possible.
Exactly.
Any, okay, supplements.
As you know, like with all of our patients, you have those, it's like a bell-shaped curve of patients,
Yep.
right? Some that are like, I don't want to take anything in my body at all in supplement form. And then you have the people that look up like their favorite biohacker and
Yep.
are on 50 different supplements. So
Yep.
I'm more towards the left side of this. I
Yeah.
have a few foundational things that I recommend for people that I take as well. And then I just start adding things in as people can tolerate it, as people have different symptoms, different things that they're focused on. So for me, my supplement regime is D3K2. I also take a really good fish oil supplement, a krill oil supplement. Actually, I like krill better than fish. And then I take creatine every day. I think it's one of the most well-studied supplements, and I take about 8 grams of creatine a day as well. I would tolerate that well, and it's neuroprotective. I take an NR supplement every day, nicotinamide riboside from True Niagen. I have blood glucose problems in my genetics. I think we both share that. So I take the Saccharomyces probiotic, which really helps me regulate my glucose levels as well. And then I take a new supplement that I really like called Urolithin A. And that allows for mitochondrial biogenesis. And so that's kind of my stack for now. But I'm always like trying different things, putting things in and out all the time.
Love it. I'm so grateful for you. We're just getting up on time now. So I just wanted to thank you so much for your time, for your expertise, for this conversation. I feel like we could be talking. I know where you're coming from, and I know we could be talking about this for hours and hours. So we'll definitely have you back at some point to do a part two. But we are so appreciative of you. Where can people find you and follow you and get more information?
Yes. So if you want to follow me, I'm on all the social channels at Darshan Shah MD. And then if you want to see me as a patient or see one of our doctors as a patient, it's at next-health.com.
Awesome. Thank you
Yeah.
so much, Darshan. This was so great.
No
And
problem.
thank you for your time. We will meet in person at some point. I know we've been crossing paths a lot.
I can't wait. I can't wait to
Thank
see you
you.
again. Thank
Thanks
you
a
so
lot.
much, Amy.
Okay. Take care.